after so well, long 5 days of workshop, all of us are tired, but I think all of us are very excited. If it wasn't for Kendrick's glasses off. So yeah, so we established that FNL may not be scale dependent, but certainly has a very strong time dependence. So 5 days ago it was 90. 4 days ago, it shared a talk, it was 60, and now it's 20. So very large time derivative. Good, you can extrapolate, and that's going to be exciting. Yeah, so it's really impossible for me to beat all the excitement that we had over the past few days. Just one thing that so this is my 2 cents on the foreground issue, and that's because everybody says WMAP is very clean and nice, and there is no, in particular, no SD effect, no signature of clusters in it. And this is an example that I want to say it's not obvious. Okay, so the reason is that a lot of my work, I guess half of the things that I've done, have to do with detecting the signature of clusters in WMAP. So there is SD effect in WMAP, so that's something to worry about, of course. Now, is it something that could screw up non-Gaussianity? That's a good question. And the plot, I stole this from an old Ichiro's paper. And this shows, this is from 99, about almost 10 years ago. And this shows the CMB, and the two halo term and one halo term from the CFX. So basically, clustering of clusters. And this is a term that clusters were just independent. So you see these are tiny if you look at compare them to the CMB. But of course, this is not the part that we are comparing with. We are if you're interested in non-Gaussianity. Most of this is Gaussian. Actually, now we know that one part in the non-Gaussianity of this is between 0.1% and 0.01%. So if you're worried about non-Gaussianity, you shouldn't be comparing this the signature of SD with this part, but you should bring this down, and this is power spectrum. You should bring this down by 6 orders of magnitude, right? So this is 3 orders of magnitude larger. Am I doing the math right? I think that's more or less right. So if you want to bring this down by 6 orders of magnitude, it's going to be down here. So just this part by itself shows you that you should worry about this. So this is not completely non-Gaussian, of course. The SD effect has a Gaussian part and a non-Gaussian part. But it's not intrinsically non-Gaussian. There is no reason to expect to effective FNL from SD to be small. So this is something to worry about. Just wanted to say that. It's not, you cannot just easily dismiss it. Okay? So that's my 2 cents on the foreground contamination for FNL. And let's move on. So I'm not going to have an introduction. I already had 5 days of introduction done by much, much better speakers than myself. So I'm just going to start with this, that this is what the formula we all know and love, or learned to know and love over the past 5 days. So this is the primordial Gaussian fluctuations induced by inflation or something else. And then this formalism at least assumes that there is some process later on that takes this Gaussian perturbation and makes it non-Gaussian. And it's approximated through this extra term. And I assume it's local, so some effort. And FNL is, of course, the infamous parameter. Now, this looks nice, and it's local. But this is at early times, as in the super horizon scales. So if you want to do anything at late times in CMB or for galaxies, it's going to look much more complicated than this. And there is transfer function, because there are acoustic oscillations that happen. And then you're interested in matter density, not potential, because you see matter density. That, so there is a very non-local convolution that goes in here if you want to write delta matter, for example, delta rho matter. And I'm not going to write this down for you. I just like you to believe me that we came up with an local approximation for that conversion from initial conditions at early times to delta matter at late times, which is local. And this is an approximation which should be taken with a grain of salt, because there are corrections that could be large in certain regimes. So you cannot certainly apply this in all regimes. But let's have a look at this. So what I'm saying is that you can model the statistics of linear matter distribution. This is linear still. So the nonlinearity might happen at early times, but in terms of amplitude, delta m is small early on at this. You can model it by some Gaussian part, but plus a term that's bilinear in Gaussians. And so there is a square of the same Gaussian field, and a product of this Gaussian field, and phi pg, which is basically the effective potential or curvature perturbation associated with this delta mg. So this is basically like the potential metric perturbation, and this is like the Gaussian density perturbation initially. And these are related via Poisson equation. Yes.
So in a sense, your FNL is then going to get a factor of k squared. Right.
Well, you don't see. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. So
it's important. What exactly? So FNL is defined here for potential, you could say. But if you define an FNL in terms of density, because of Poisson equation, you get an extra k squared. So effective FNL for the, of course, the form would be very different. But if you just in terms of orders of magnitude, FNL for density is a k squared different from FNL for potential. So, and this epsilon has something to do with the transfer function and the Poisson equation. And it's basically some small number, like 10 to the minus 5, and it only logarithmically depends on mass. And mass, basically, this approximation is a scale dependent. If you smooth your, if you want to smooth your density on some scale, that scale matters. It's not scale independent, basically. If you smoothen your density on different on another scale, you cannot use exact this approximation. You have to update. You have to update mass in this formula. So that's just a simple mathematical approximation, but it has significant implications. So your spherical collapse that Ravi talked about yesterday, for example, if you have a collapse threshold, and if you have elliptical collapse, so this EC stands for elliptical collapse, then this might depend on mass. But we can ignore that for this point, at this point. The point is now, you are interested in the points where this delta m crosses some threshold. Okay. But what does that imply for delta mg? This is the field that we understand it's a statistic. This is the field which does actual physics collapses. And the places that this delta m is larger than delta c, the critical collapse threshold, are the places that form clusters, for example. So if I'm interested in that threshold to zero to first order in FNL, this delta mg, or to zero order in FNL, this delta mg is just the collapse threshold. And I can just replace this delta mg in here by the collapse threshold. It's just I'm solving this equation perturbatively. So you end up with a modified collapse threshold, which is described in terms of superposition of this delta mg and this phi pg. Because to zero order in FNL, I know what this is. This is what the equation becomes, basically. So your modified collapse threshold to first order FNL is that this Gaussian, or this linear superposition of delta mg and phi pg should be larger than this a slightly modified collapse threshold. And notice that now this is a Gaussian field. And this is also a fixed collapse threshold. So it's the exact same prescription as you had in ordinary Gaussian initial conditions. You just have to slightly change your Gaussian field. It's now a superposition of the two different Gaussian fields. And it slightly change your collapse threshold. So this is great, because I can now use everything that I learned in from simulations with Gaussian initial conditions and apply it to non-Gaussian initial conditions. if the steps that I went through hold, if that those approximation hold, then so I've translated a problem of a spherical collapse or nonlinear collapse with non-Gaussian initial conditions to a problem of nonlinear collapse with Gaussian initial conditions, but a slightly modified Gaussian initial conditions. So this, I'm going to tell you that it's going to tell you all the interesting properties that you think you want to get, and you know you get from non-Gaussianity, primordial non-Gaussianity. For example, this is an effective sigma m. The RMS fluctuations on the RMS linear fluctuation on a mass scale m. This is how much it's modified if FNL was 100. And this is mass dependent now, because the coefficients there are mass dependent. If you remember, this epsilon was mass dependent. And it turns out the elliptical collapse threshold is also mass dependent. So I'm saying that if you have FNL of 100, its effect is just like having sigma m on this mass scale, for example, be 0.7% larger. For the statistics of collapse objects, these are identical, basically. That's what I'm saying. You can replace your initial power expectation of initial sigma m by something that's 10% larger, and that's going to give you the same effect. So this is how much basically effective change in sigma of m due to FNL, due to non-primordial non-Gaussian. That's right, the correction to the power spectrum. But this is not the actual correction to the power spectrum. This is the power spectrum that's relevant for collapsed objects, right? So this is what you should plug into your Preceptor or Shek-Tolman formula to get your mass function. The actual power spectrum, it of course doesn't change the first order FNL, right?
But
that's
an integral of the power spectrum.
That's
an integral of the power spectrum smoothed with whatever R that depends on M.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the same.
So this is just the criteria.
Yeah.
I'm saying this is a new basic density field, the new Gaussian field that you have to. That's right, absolutely. It is an integral of a power spectrum, absolutely.
The thing is an integral.
But what I'm trying to say is that this is not a true power spectrum. If you map matter with lensing, for example, your power spectrum is not going to affect the affinity like this. But if you are interested in collapsed objects, the effect of primordial non-Gaussianity is likely modifying your power spectrum in this way. Okay? This is redshift 2, and this is redshift 5. And this is a very large mass scale, of course. So I think this is a very powerful tool if we can make sure that this the approximation that I made to get here is correct. Because now you can basically talk about any statistics that you're interested in with primordial non-Gaussianity using all the Gaussian tools that you've developed over the past 20 years.
The thought that you have two Gaussian variables and you're asking for a rare pair, but the thought that as you go further and further out in sigma space, a delta squared becomes smaller more quickly than a delta does. But here you've got the opposite, right? Here you're saying that.
You see, you have this phi term. And you know that phi has much larger power on larger scales than delta does. So if you want to think about the power spectrum of this guy, phi has a lot of power here than it does here. So this part is starting to double. That's it. And this is the same effect that Grant and Hutterer and Hilda Lall are talking about. Because you get larger bias, basically. Larger clustering for and larger scales, basically. That's all because of this extra phi coming.
It's the Poisson equation.
Sorry?
It comes from the Poisson equation.
Absolutely. It does come from the Poisson equation. But I'm saying that you can also use this for mass function. Okay? Now, what I have to do is to check if this is consistent with other estimators or other MVJ formalism of Fenner Preceptor or what Dallal and company have come up with. But that's it. That's the prescription. Now, the other part that you can draw from, the other conclusion you can draw from this framework, it's just that you also modulate, because of this formula, you also modulate larger scale clustering. And that's also easy to see. Basically, if you have a square, so several people, I think Lichia and Dragan have gone through this, but this is maybe another way of seeing this. If you have a square of a Gaussian term, you can decompose it to a smaller scale and larger scale mode. And because of this quadratic term, you have a cross term. If you look at the small scale perturbations, there will be a cross term between a smaller scale Gaussian perturbation and a larger scale Gaussian perturbations. So the amplitude of a small scale perturbations is modulated by this larger scale perturbation. So if you have a larger scale mode, it's going to modulate the amplitude of a small scale perturbation. And actually, this is the same effect that Dalal and company talked about. This modulation, this is basically by Newtonian potential. The implication is that galaxy distribution will be much more inhomogeneous on larger scale if there is a large FNL. And this is an intuitive way of saying this. If you have uncorrelated modes, that is, if you have Gaussian statistics, these modes are just added on top of larger scale modes. So the properties of these modes here and these modes here are the same. They have the same amplitude. It's just the background that is different if you have a larger scale mode. So that's how you get basically bias. If you have a larger scale mode that's positive somewhere, you get more collapsed objects. Say this is density. And if it's negative somewhere, this larger scale mode, then you get less collapsed objects. However, if you have non-Gaussian bias, the actual amplitude of these fluctuations is also modulated because of that cross term, because of non-Gaussian coupling. So here, where you have a positive mode, the amplitude would be larger. Here, where you have a negative mode, negative larger scale mode, the amplitude is smaller. And this is how basically the number of galaxies is modulated on larger scale. And this modulation is controlled by construction, by the potential. Although this modulation is controlled by the density. So that's how you get the sum of the density and potential. Yes?
I'm not understanding. Sure. I mean, this is just one mode, but if we're really having an infinite number of the same mode.
Yes.
And I thought it would kind of cancel out, right? But maybe it's not.
No, so this is a specific realization. I'm not talking about average. A specific realization has lots of peaks and valleys, right? And there are places where these peaks cross the collapse threshold, so you form up the collapse objects, clusters, etc. And the places where the amplitude is smaller, amplitude of the peaks, so you don't collapse, or less of them collapse, fewer of them collapse, so you have fewer collapsed objects. So this is for a specific realization. All I'm saying is that the statistics of this in the smaller scale modes is not controlled by these larger scale modes. If you have non-Gaussianity. So the number of collapsed objects is not controlled by basically what your larger scale mode is through this extra modulus. So this is what people knew about. This is actual bias. Kaiser, I think, broke it out 20 years ago. This is non-Gaussian bias that was actually pointed out more recently. But I guess Sabino Matarias also worked it out 20 years ago. We just forgotten about it. So that was Lichia's start. Now, this is the difference between what I get and what Dalal and company get. And Lichia gets something very similar to this. So the bias, which is basically the ratio of galaxy perturbations to the matter or density perturbations, has a Gaussian form, which is constant on larger scales, but has another form, which is basically the ratio of density to potential on larger scales, which goes as 1 over k squared. And it turns out that there are other numerical factors that you may not want to care about very much. There is an extra correction that Lichia pointed out also in her talk, that this is not actually 1 over k squared. This is 1 over k squared times t of k, where t of k is a recombination transfer function, because the phi that enters in the Gaussian formula is the primordial phi, is not the Newtonian potential that you measure today. It's a Newtonian potential on larger scales early on during radiation era. So that's this extra T of K transfer function that comes in. The modulation isn't by the potential, it's by the initial curvature perturbations. Anyway, so this is amazing because your bias, so this is bias minus this constant Gaussian bias divided by this factor. And we are, Lichia's results, my results, and Dragon and Dalal and company result are all consistent here, more or less. You know, there are 20-30% maybe difference here. This is amazing because basically your bias, even with this small FNL, could be larger by a factor of 10, for example, on larger scales. So your galaxy could be much more, yeah, so this is a tiny non-Gaussianity. This is 0.1% non-Gaussianity. But it could affect the galaxy distribution on larger scales, in small case, very significantly. Galaxies are 10 times more clustered now, even with this small non-Gaussianity. So this might be a very significant characteristic, a smoking gun for primordial non-Gaussianity, if you can measure scales as big as this. Yes?
Sorry, I just want to ask a question that you asked.
Yes.
If k goes to infinity, doesn't the bias have to go back to one because you're looking at modes that enclose?
And here's the thing. It's not only, if you're talking about galaxies, it's not only the density that matters. It's also the statistics. Because how many clusters you form or how many collapsed objects form is not there is no one-to-one relation between that and the density. It also depends on how much you fluctuate, how bigly or how homogeneous your density field is. And that's not controlled by density as it turns out. That's controlled by this curvature method, by phi. Right? So even if you have a completely homogeneous density, but or at least on large scale, completely homogeneous, but your statistics is different in different regions, you get different numbers of galaxies. Okay, so Mike?
So don't the Sloan data for like LRGs go around out to about 0.01-ish?
Yes. So this is going to be
such a huge difference.
Yeah, so they are, I mean, I think they are at the mark. So Padmanabhan and the Sloan are company are working on that. I think the error is around 100 at this point. So yes, but they are very close. So we are, if there is a larger FNL, we are the verge of detecting it with larger scale structure.
But it would be degenerate with things like your window function, NS, your bias,
this is very steep, right? It's like a factor.
But if you can go out there, but this gets very small.
Right? The error bar blows up because you're over volume.
Exactly. Well, does that affect the CMV lensing and the ISW because those probe scales closer to the left-hand side, and that, in fact, that's a factor of a few.
You're talking about galaxies, collapsed objects.
Sure, but NGSS and all these guys are radio galaxies.
Very good question. ISW. Now, of course, you know what ISW is? So the audience doesn't need an introduction. If there's acceleration, potential decays with time, and this is the formula, this is just gravitational redshift. If potential is not constant, integral of phi dot dt gives a secondary anisotropy, which is important on larger scales.
And you don't really see it in this in W map because the errors are huge, the cosmic variance is huge. But you can cross correlate with galaxies, and you do get something in principle. It's still a small significance. But it's an independent evidence for dark energy, because if there was no dark energy, at least in a flat universe, you wouldn't get this ISW effect. So this is a positive correlation between galaxies and CMB due to the ISW effect. So all of you know this. I stole this from Marlona's paper, which compiles different detections of ISW until the end of 2007, it turns out, because there wasn't anything after that. So this is the detection divided by the bias, and this is the function of median redshift for the surveys that people have cross-correlated with. So this is the data that I worked on. I've been involved with CSS at some level, and these are other data sets that people have worked on. And the funny thing is that these are all larger than what you predict. So this is lambda CDM prediction, and these are all the ISW detections, basically, or significant or hints, basically. These are around 2 to 3 sigma, all of them. And this is a more recent data set combining two mass NBSS and SPSS LRGs and quasars. And this is the amplitude of basically observed ISW divided by the expectation from WMAP 3 best fit. And so you can ignore these dashed lines. all the dots are actually larger. Almost all of them, except for this one that has a huge error, are larger from larger than your prediction. And these are all uncorrelated points, basically, more or less. And actually, the average ratio is 2.2 plus and minus 0.6. So it's around 2 sigma deviation from what you expect from lambda CDM double map test model.
So,
could it be non-Gaussianity? Well, it's a possibility. So larger scale galaxies follow the Newtonian potential rather than dark matter density, as I argued for you, if there is a non-Gaussianity. RSW also follows the potential on larger scales. So you expect a good correlation between the two if there is a non-Gaussianity. And the thing is that this yields a much bigger power on very large scales because galaxies, as I mentioned, are much more inhomogeneous on very large scales. So this is an example. This is the cross-correlation power spectrum between NVSS and CMB as predicted by within lambda CDM. If Gaussian statistics was true, that is, if you had linear constant bias, this would have been the prediction. And almost half of the points, but actually almost all the points, are above this prediction. And this seems to be getting a slightly bigger, specifically for this point, at the small Ls. This is the prediction for non-Gaussian statistics. So at large Ls, then this non-Gaussian bias is not important. You don't see any effect, but as small as this could blow up. And this is basically like the autopower spectrum of RSW effect. But anyway, the point is that here you have much larger power, so you could have much in galaxy distribution. So you can much larger cross correlation. And indeed, there is a signal like that, and this is consistent with FNL of 240 plus and minus 120. Yes?
What do you mean?
You have a definition of an L when you do it.
This is the standard definition of an L. Yes. It's local, though, of course. And an interesting thing to note is that this is a very squeezed triangle. Because in effect, you're talking about triangles that have a one side within a galaxy, which collapses, and the other side at the other galaxy, which is, could be much further. Or actually, no. Yeah, the other galaxies could be much farther away. I mean, that may not be. Okay, so imagine that you're thinking about autocorrelation of galaxies, that's clear. This large power really has to do with very squeezed triangles, but two of the points is within one galaxy, and the other point is a very far away galaxy. So this very squeezed triangle. So this really relies on local non-Gaussianity.
So this shows up at low L. Is there any data point at L of 2? I mean, it's upper bound. Presumably, there must be an upper bound.
L of 2.
Yeah,
L of 2, they don't show it in their papers. I think there is a data point which has huge errors.
But
and measure
L of 2, you basically need the whole scale.
But NVSS does have the whole scale. I mean,
but you see, it's much harder to understand large scale distribution in NVSS because of all kinds of systematics, latitude dependence, things of that sort. So as this year I can tell you, galaxies on larger scales are very hard to understand. So that's a challenge. But anyway, that's it. I think it's a powerful method. How well you can do, this is the projection from Planck where we delta FNL around 3. I claim that you can, at least at one sigma, you can get this competitive constraint
using a cross-correlation with galaxies. And this is the predicted signal to noise assuming some FNL. So, and this is the maximum redshift of the survey, and I assume it's a redshift survey, but you don't really need to know exact redshift. Photometric redshift would suffice. At redshift 0.5, 1, 2, and 5. And you can see that if you have basically the whole universe, essentially, in galaxies, you know the galaxy distribution in the whole universe after redshift of 5. You can actually, through cross-correlation with the RSW effect, basically through cross-correlation with WMAP, you can get signal-to-noise of around 3. But then it's a very non-Gaussian noise. So you see the signal-to-noise doesn't really linearly increase with FNL. So if FNL was 100, you could only detect it at around like 3 to 4 sigma at best. Because this is a very non-Gaussian statistic. So that's how
this is on, right? So this might be technicality, but anyway.
Okay, so if you want to rule out on Gaussianity at 3 sigma level, this may not be your best way, but at 1 sigma level, it could be competitive. The good thing is insensitive to systematics on larger scales, because your CMB systematics on larger scales and your galaxy systematics on larger scales most likely are very uncorrelated. So if you're looking at the cross-correlation, there is very little chance to have systematic contamination. As opposed to looking at galaxies only on larger scales, there's all kind of like magnitude calibration or things of that sort could give you large power, large spurious power. So this, there is no systematic, there is, I think, very little systematic contamination in this method, or systematic error in this method. There could be large statistical error. That's why errors are large at this point. So anyway, so I think large-scale surveys could do competitively in this regard. And that's my conclusion. So 3:30, that's, as promised, the end of the workshop. So so if you... If I haven't screwed something up, I think I have a prescription to basically a general framework to model Hadron statistics, assuming local primordial non-Gaussianity. From galaxy CMB correlation, at this point, you can 240 plus or minus 120. If you combine this with Ichiro's result, just for the heck of it, it's 71 plus or minus 29, which is not much better because this is a huge error, of course. And galaxy CMB eventually will give you a small delta FNL, but of course we have to wait and see. This is preliminary work. And let's see what else do I want to tell you. I guess this is a good way to conclude the workshop on primordial non-Gaussianity. And there might be less and less evidence for what I'm going to tell you now. But I prepared this slide before the workshop, before WMAP5. So this is a brief history of cosmology in perspective. In 60s, it was cosmic microwave background. That was the main theme. 70s, it was dark matter. 80s, it was inflation. 90s, the CMB anisotropies, COBE, and other satellites revolutionized cosmology. 2000s, we discovered about dark energy. Cosmic concordance, we came up with a lambda CDM model. Now, what's next? So this is I predict it's going to be, it's now less and less likely with a more hardcore down-to-earth observers telling us about the right value of FNL. But I guess this is a prediction that maybe next decade will be a decade of primordial non-Gaussianity. And I hope this was a way to kick off that next decade. Okay, so here you have it. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
I'm wondering the ISP measurements have such big errors, but is it right to say that the reason that you get such good constraints on FNL is because the effect
exactly.
But then also, once you get to that low of L, the effect should turn over. Once you hit horizon scales, you don't have that case square anymore.
No, it doesn't turn over. But you never actually reach the horizon scale.
But on your plot, you showed up to, K of 0.00.
Yeah,
you should start.
So the definition of
two, you should start seeing correction.
But the definition of bias is kind of gauge dependent because delta matter. You cannot really define it well on larger scale, but you can choose a definition for delta M and there is no effect. And I think at the end of the day, it shouldn't really matter.
But the relationship between density and potential should be constant once you have
it. That depends on your gauge. So I think that for, at least for galaxy distribution, that's not the right gauge, basically, to think about this. I think you should think about something like curvature perturbation.
Even then,
we shouldn't
have that case square
factor,
right? If I look at it.
Bias depends on what gauge you define delta matter. So in principle, you should look at something that's gauge independent. And I think that can be done. I don't think that's a big issue. I don't know of any reason why it should be a big issue. But that should only kick in at K, I think, at horizon scale. This is like 1 over 3,000.
Yes.
But I don't, I think with the right choice of gauge, that's not, that doesn't really give you any feature in that plot. So we can discuss that later.
What happens in 2020?
Do I have 2020? Ah, that's a good question. Just come back in 10 years and we'll pay you. Okay. Thank you.